All right, Matthew, welcome to episode 62 of the Performers Advantage podcast, where we bring sports science to the people with myself, Dr. Will O'Connor, and Dr. Matt Miller, sports scientist. This week on the show, we're talking the science of lactate. I got a new lactate meter. We're getting a bunch of questions, so we want to go over the science of lactate threshold and lactate during exercise. You can support the show and get more content from us by signing up to SmartMTB Training or the Endurance Training Hub. Matt and I run live webinars every Wednesday night, so check that out. And we also still are running the Performance Advantage Masterclass, which you can get access to on our website. Sign up to our mailing list and get 50% off the Performance Advantage Masterclass and find out where and when we're doing other webinars and great content. All right, Matt, have you been up to much?
Yeah, of course. Always doing something. This week, what I wanted to really do is I wanted to go out and test my performance on the mountain bike with flat pedals versus clip pedals.
So, is this where you like drove all the way out?
Yeah.
Ruined your brake pads.
Yeah. So, you know, I was filming as I was climbing up the hill, talking to myself in the camera, and I had actually some great footage, B-roll, everything, and my brakes were just making a bit too much noise, and I'm always like changing brake components, and sometimes I don't bed them in properly. You know, this common problem. Normally I have it sorted. So I went to my van. Actually, I ended up crashing because then I was using the front brake more on the way down. It was a whole mess. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to fix this brake. And I have everything with me. I have new rotors, new pads, new everything, but I didn't have the right pads for this brake. I had it for all my other brakes. So when I'm like, okay, I'll just clean it because I have brake cleaner. And the one thing that I didn't have totally sorted is my rag was kind of a little bit used before. So when I was cleaning the rotor, I think what I did is I totally contaminated it. And then I went to bed it in and the brakes just didn't work. So I just had to go home, right? There's no other option. And then, you know, it's been raining since. But I'm really interested to measure my braking, looking at the different pedals, because I don't ride with flat pedals much. But every time I do, they feel amazing going down hills. And they actually feel totally fine climbing. The only time they feel really bad is on flat, kind of traversy parts of the trail where I don't feel like I have as much control of the bike. But cornering, it feels really, really good. And with Brake Ace, we have this super deep dive analysis where we can look at where the apex is of your turn, of every turn for every person, and we can see if you're braking past that apex. And I feel really good cornering with flat pedals, so I'm interested to see how my braking changes. So I'm going to have to, hopefully one day this week, it's not just pouring down and I'll be back out there.
I'm actually interested in brake pad contamination. So they just didn't work because you used a dirty rag.
Yeah, well, so I have brake cleaner. I spray it. Brake cleaner is so bad. Like, if you get it on your skin, you can see your skin, I don't know,
dissolving,
dying. Yeah, it's so bad. But so I spray it onto a rag, and then I use the rag to then clean my brakes and take the pads out, clean those, and a lot of dirt comes off of the pads, especially. I must have just got like a drip of bad stuff in there, spread it around. They're shot. They're going straight in the garbage.
Oh man, yeah, that's a lot different than me running brake pads for about 3 years.
Well, you remember when I put those new rotors on your bike, how you're like, wow, this is amazing.
Game changer.
Yeah, and we didn't even change your pads because your rotors were so worn. But
the same ones are still on there.
Yeah. Well, you know, pro tip, if you want your brakes to work better, change your rotors. That's for all our listeners. Change your rotors as much as your pads and maybe more, because once they start to smooth out, they just don't work very well.
Makes sense.
You know? We're always told that, you know, change your pads. But I guess because it's cheaper.
That's right.
So what have you been up to?
Well, training. You know, trying to dial in this 24-hour race. But Matt, I bought a new lactate meter and I was really overwhelmed by the amount of interest a lot of people had. And it's because it's one of those it's hard science, right? But it's also hard science to understand. Like, there's a lot of pseudoscience around lactate.
Yeah.
You know, I lactated out. You know, man, I got the buildup of lactate. The reason I slowed down is because I had lactate in my legs. Oh, that burning sensation in my legs, that's lactate. You know,
Can I tell you my favorite?
Yeah, go.
I went lactic.
Oh. We shouldn't laugh because people are like, am I not allowed saying that?
Yeah. So I know, like, one of the things that really annoys me is when suddenly we see like a new scientist or a new coach come and they start bashing people for saying these things that we're talking about right now. And these words like I went lactic and things like that. So these sayings are so common in our sports that they just kind of find their way through like anything. Like, you know, shave your legs because it makes you faster kind of thing.
And don't shave them the day before because you'll use too much energy growing the hair back.
Yeah, those kind of things. Like those wives' tales and those terminologies that we use, like everyone just adopts them. So when I see a new coach bashing someone for not understanding lactate, I'm like, well, I don't think anyone actually understands lactate that well. Even the scientists. We were reading some science articles earlier and like, oh, well, they just skimmed over the part that we're looking for. There's obviously not like this amazing understanding of lactate during
exercise. Okay, and so that's going to be our topic of the week, lactic acid or lactate and exercise. Matt, you were throwing out some questions you'd been sent. I got sent some questions. So I thought we might as well start the discussion by just addressing some of those. A lot of them come from, I was posting up on my social media around, you know, I got a new lactate meter and I was doing some tests. I did like a lactate threshold determinant test, like a lactate curve test, and I did like a threshold marathon based session, and I posted up sort of my results. So first off, Matt, we should probably like define lactate and why we should care about it in terms of exercise, and then try to address that all-encompassing word threshold.
Ooh, okay, let's get into it. Like, so blood lactate, it goes by, you know, different kind of names because lactate's being made in the muscle and then it's comes out of the cell into the blood, and that's what we measure because we're not actually measuring the lactate concentration in the muscle cell, because if we wanted to do that, we'd have to stab you and take out a muscle cell and then measure the blood lactate concentration. So we're measuring it in the blood, and you could call it lactate, blood lactate. Like, those are probably the most common terms, right?
Yeah. It's and so we have lactate in the blood. Lactic acid is what is immediately produced through anaerobic metabolism. So this is really where the hard exercise burning sensation, all that kind of like I went lactic association comes, because once we go above our red line, you know, that line of diminishing returns, once we go, we'll just call it hard, we're going for something of, you know, 10 minutes or 30 minutes or something, we go above the certain intensity, we start to require energy at a rate that is above the rate at which oxygen can supply the energy. So oxidative metabolism, aerobic metabolism, we can't get energy fast enough. So then what we can do is we can get some more energy via anaerobic metabolism, so without oxygen. But a byproduct of that is lactic acid. So it only occurs through glycolysis, which is the burning of sugar or glucose. And so we produce lactic acid, but it immediately, I'm going to get a bit sciencey, Matt, disassociates a hydrogen ion.
Ooh, yeah, but that's a bad thing. That's important to know.
Well, that is the acidic part of it. Yeah. So anyway, we get these hydrogen ions. We get this lactate. Now, it's not lactic acid. It's called lactate, just acid-based chemistry there. And we need to get those two toxic products out of the cell, or we just need to get rid of them. So we'll get into sort of how you can get rid of lactate. But number one is just getting it out into the blood. And so we can then, export it to the liver or some other cell within the body that can utilize it. We need to get rid of it, okay? It gets put into the blood. We take a small blood sample. We measure blood lactate. Boom. There it is. So and we went is, hard.
This is when you feel that burning, right?
Yeah. And you feel that burning in your muscles for a lot of different reasons. Obviously, like you're going really hard. There's that acidity, that increase in pH. There's a greater amount of muscle recruitment. There's a lot of issues going on. Like, it's not just lactic acid, and it's definitely not just lactate in the blood that is causing you to feel that burning sensation. But there is an association there. And so that's where lactate and blood lactate get, I guess, a bad reputation, because you're going really hard. I'll measure your blood lactate with a finger prick and analysis. And so you go, well, blood lactate's high. I feel like crap.
Yeah, blood it really burns.
Yeah. It has the word acid in it. Acid burns.
Yeah. And what about fatty acids?
And that's a brief science of how we end up with these ambiguous terminologies around going hard and being lactic.
Yeah, but it's important to know, actually, that lactate can be our friend.
Most definitely.
Yeah, so I thought about making a song here. You know, hello, okay. Lactate. My old friend. No. With copyright infringement, I know. It'd be a bit tough. But so lactate, actually, it can be our friend. And if we're very well trained, we can convert lactate into something called pyruvate. And then pyruvate can be used to do muscular contraction. It is then converted to acetyl-CoA. And then it goes into the citric acid cycle.
Yeah. And that is oxidative phosphorylation. And, Matt, this becomes where being really aerobically trained and having the ability to recover is super important. But it also becomes super important to train at or above lactate threshold, because you need this ability to remove and buffer and metabolize lactate as a metabolite. So we're kind of like, that's the brief. That's the brief of where we're at. So first off, I guess we know now, Matt, it's created when we go hard, right? But how does it impact performance? Like, if I have, a lot of our listeners, we've got a lot of ultra runners, got a lot of marathon runners, got a lot of mountain bikers, cross-country, enduro mountain bikers. These are all very different sports, but they all can be, you know, performance can be determined by the lactate threshold and ability to metabolize lactate. So we should probably get into like how this is going to impact our performance across like a range of different, I don't necessarily want to say endurance sports, but just like and sports that last longer than a few minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the lactate threshold is one of the most important things that to determine the outcome of any sport that requires you to go hard for, like you said, more than a couple of minutes. So Usain Bolt, he's probably not that interested in his lactate threshold because he just has to run one time for 9.5 seconds or 9.7?
I think it's 9.58.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty fast. So he doesn't care about lactate. He's producing a ton of it because he's doing such massive muscular contractions and his lactate concentration is getting huge. But he's not really that concerned about what his lactate threshold is, the sustainable level. But anyone else, you know, mountain bikers go hard, go easy, go hard, go easy. Marathon runners go steady. So performance in those kind of sports, and if you think about those two very different demands, that covers a lot of different sports, including team sports. But obviously, team sports, there's usually a different goal. It's not just exercising. But, you win by scoring a point and you do the...
Right? I know. I remember how team sports work.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. You remember that? Okay. So, but really, so the ability to go hard multiple times or to go hard for a very long time is determinant on the level of your lactate threshold. So that's why it's so important.
Yeah, that's right. So when we if we sort of work through some of the intensities to give you a base, the one way you initially figure out your lactate threshold is you can do a step test. So this is what I did. I got my lactate meter and I thought, well, now I need to figure out, like, what is my threshold? So I ran at increasing speeds for 1200 meters. I went to an athletics track. It's a measured, track. I'm going to be doing 400 meters every lap. And then I want something that's going to last 4 to 6 minutes. Something that is going to elicit steady state. So we want steady state, meaning something that is steady in terms of our physiology and metabolism. Because if we just did 1 minute, there's a lot of things that are going on that need to catch up to, metabolize that energy and muscular contractions, increase in heart rate. There's a lot of things that need to happen for you to reach steady state. So 1200 meters for me, I was able to do it at increasing speeds, and you can track at which speed, or if you are on the bike, you'll probably use power, at which power output lactate begins to accumulate. So you'll start out and maybe it's, just over zero. And then you'll increase your speed and maybe it's about one. And then maybe it's a bit over one, maybe around two. And then there'll be a point at which it reaches four.
Yikes.
And after four, and these are millimolars, the concentration within the blood. Then you can start to see, okay, after you cross four, which for me was 3:30 per kilometer, I tried to increase again, and I was going in 30-second increments in speed. Tried to do 3 minutes per K. I couldn't, and I tested after that, and it went to 13.6 or something.
Sheesh.
So I went, I think it was 5 minute Ks, 4.5 minute Ks, 4 minute Ks, 3:30, 3 minutes, and I went 1.2, 1.2, 1 in terms of my concentration. Then I went 4.2 at 3.5 minute Ks, and then I went 13.
So definitely over the limit. You couldn't sustain that for very long. So what was the feeling then at the pace that you had a lactate concentration of 13? How did it feel in your legs?
Max.
Okay.
Like that, it was, if I talk through to people can maybe relate a bit better, it was kind of like I was just running,
a jog.
Yeah, just got, and then steady, would have called it steady, but comfortable, and then comfortable, uncomfortable, like at threshold, right? And that's what you would assume, like people are probably like, oh yeah, I couldn't sustain this for very long, it's requiring a lot of mental concentration, it is quite hard, but I can keep going, but like I'm going to, because I have a goal to achieve. And then beyond that was like, oh my god, this is so hard. Like everything you're doing then is concentrating on not stopping, really.
Yeah.
And because that's exactly what your whole physiology is saying, like, just stop, you're going too hard. You're redlining it. This is going to end badly.
Yeah, like this is everything kind of coming together. This is science. This is feelings. This is your body's feedback.
Yeah, evolution. This, what you're doing is bad.
Yeah, like, hey, no. But, the beautiful thing is now that we have blood lactate analyzers and we understand kind of what's happening in the muscle, so we can say, hey, you know what? I'm not going to go that hard. I'm just going to go a little bit slower. But it's interesting to note, like, so we're producing lactate all the time. And this is, I think one of and this goes back to the energy systems. So we're using every energy system at any given time. They kind of exist on this continuum, and we're using one more than the other at different kind of intensities. So if we're just sitting there, your blood lactate concentration is 1 millimole per liter. You start walking, your blood lactate concentration is 1 millimole per liter. And for you jogging at 5 minute Ks, you're probably at 1 millimole per liter. So you're producing it and clearing it really quickly. And that's really, really important thing. So we just need to get better at going faster, producing it still, obviously, because we're going faster, but then clearing it just as fast. And that's kind of the beauty in training for the kind of events that we're talking about.
Yeah. So like that's how you, that's the initial test you do. You kind of, you can figure out also the rate of increase, you know. So what I did, because it's running, it's a lot harder to do very controlled incremental steps. Like when you have a power meter and you also have like a resistance controlled bike, like a smart trainer or these fancy bikes we have in the laboratory, you can just increase by like 15 watts. And then you can track like how much are you increasing? Are you, once you get over your threshold, let's say that's 200 watts, at 215 watts, you know, your threshold being 4 millimolar, are you now at 7? Have you already started that massive in like rate of blood lactate accumulation where you're now, it's just not sustainable? Or do you increase to 4.5? And then we can continue. So there are, there are specifics around what you, how you buffer lactate and how, what the rate of accumulation is. Like for me, obviously, like I do ultra running, marathon running. I'm training for a 24-hour race. I got to threshold. I went 15 seconds per K faster and I was gone, you know, because that's training specific. I haven't been training to run a 5K or anything like that. I haven't been doing those really short, sharp intervals with short recoveries. But we can test that now as well. And so what I was able to find out was, cool, it's around 3.5 minute Ks is my threshold. Now, how efficient am I around that? Because that's going to be different again, depending on your fitness level and your training. About, you know, for me, as someone who's going to be running a marathon and also these ultra marathons, everything I do is steady state. You know, there's no like huge increases or decreases in intensity. Whereas we can do the same thing to determine a threshold for a mountain biker, like any kind of mountain biker. But what we can do there around their threshold is figure out how long they can stay above it at certain intensities, but more importantly, how quickly they can recover when they are below it.
Ooh. Now we're getting like really in depth. Like we're that's like a crazy deep dive, but that's really, really important, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Because if you go hard, you know, at the if you're doing an enduro or a downhill, right? Or even a mountain cross-country race, you go hard at the start.
Classic, right?
You can't sustain that, right? You can't. And sometimes, like in a downhill race, you don't need to because there's going to be a section of no pedaling and it's just concentrated bike control and stability and all that. So there's still a lot of work going on, but it's not hard. And, you know, you're not having to output power per se to get yourself forward. Gravity's taking care of that. So you want to be able to, because you've gone hard out the gate, you've gone from a standing start to as fast as you can essentially, but you still might have 5 to 10 minutes of track left. Yeah. So now you need to recover, right?
Yeah. And that's where it gets really, really important to be aerobically fit. So you go really hard, obviously you're going to generate a lot of lactate and get that acidity that you're going to feel. But if we have a chance to have a little bit of a break and we are able to switch to aerobic metabolism, because we're so well aerobically trained, then we're not going to be producing any more lactate. So that actually gives us a chance to, well, we will produce it, but not as much. So that gives us a chance to start to clear that lactate, which is really important because we're going to have to pedal again and continue.
That's right, because the lactate, we went hard out the gate, right? So the lactate is there. It's in our system. It doesn't just disappear. Like, we need to metabolize it. Being super well-trained and aerobically fit allows us to metabolize it actually within the muscle cell, convert it back into that acetyl-CoA Matt talked about, oxidative phosphorylation, essentially aerobic metabolism. Now we created energy, like
from lactate,
from lactate. Like it's awesome. We also get more efficient at exporting it through the monocarboxylate transporters in the muscle cell. So now it's in the blood, but now it's getting to the, you know, cardiac tissue, it's getting to the liver, it's getting to the brain, it's being metabolized again. We're just super efficient beings. If we are aerobically trained, this is the part of, you know, Matt and I's continuous saying of zone two or train easy, get fast, is that when you are super well aerobically trained, you have the capacity to, one, when you slow down, enter into like aerobic metabolism, and also that point at which you enter into aerobic metabolism is still really fast because your threshold is so high. So the misconception is that we need to go hard to get fast. And while that's not untrue, it just like...
The truth is that we just need to get really good and really fast when we're going easy.
That's even better. That's it. Yeah, because when we talk about this threshold, you know, talk about me doing this stepwise test, I want to get to the point where, you know, I was at 5 minute, 4.5, 4 minute Ks, all at 1 millimolar. Like you said, like I'm just working aerobically. There's nothing in particular in the metabolite side of things that is slowing me down there. That's going to be muscle damage and all that other kind of motivation, heat, that kind of stuff's going to slow me down. But metabolically, no issues. Then I get to 3.5 minute Ks. Now I'm having issues. Now I can't do that forever. I want to get there at 1 millimolar. If I do that, then I get to 3:15s, and I'm not at 13 anymore. I'm at 4. So then I get to 3s, and now I'm a much faster runner. And I can do that by just getting fitter aerobically, because I'm just pushing what we'd call pushing the curve out. That inflection point where I went from 4 to 13 within the space of 15 seconds per K, I want that to be as far to the, if we're looking at a graph.
Yeah, this is where it was really handy when we were doing the masterclass, because we actually had a graph on the same thing that you're talking about.
And the webinars, right?
Yeah.
And so pushing it to the right. Anyway, you get faster. Same with power output, right? If you're at 300 watts and you do you can do so much training below 300 watts to actually end up pushing that threshold to 330. And that's why you see these professional athletes doing these big sessions out on the road, out in the trails, just riding or running for hours at end and doing these big volumes of training, although their race may be only, quote unquote, only 30 minutes, 10 minutes, 1 hour, you know, but they might be training 15, 20 hours a week.
Yeah. That's why, one of the reasons why I hate the term endurance training, because it gives this conception that, well, we only ride for 6 hours to train our endurance. And like, okay, like that's kind of why, but there's so many other benefits to doing, just give the example of a 6 hour ride. Not that everyone's out there doing 6 hour rides, but there's so many other benefits besides just your endurance per se. Because, you know, what is endurance anyway? that's another topic.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, that's another topic. But
yeah, you're right. So what, like, you got a couple of questions and I thought they were really good points we could answer.
Yeah.
So what do we have there? One was, I know, around like the lactate meter. Why don't we all have them? And why don't we really understand more about this? Because there's a lot of background science that kind of goes into understanding that whole thing, right?
Yeah. So the question was, how much does a sensor cost? And could someone evaluate the data for themselves, or do you need a PhD in sports science to know what to look for? So that's the question. And so I don't actually know how much they cost, because I've used the same one that you have, the Lactate Pro, and that's the one we used when I was at the uni in the States. That's one we used at our uni here. I'm pretty sure it's just what everyone uses. So how much was it?
They're around $1,000. So the actual meter, yeah, you're going to be spending close to $1,000, right, just to get the analytical tool. So as a initial outlay because of the value of it, probably like not outrageous. It'll last forever. The thing that is the real cost is the consumables. So depending on what kind of arrangement you have with your supplier, a strip, like a lactate strip is what it's called. This is, so the way you collect lactate is you'll have a finger prick.
This is an important thing to talk about, actually. Because we've done it so many times, right?
And we just see it in our head like, oh yeah. And people are like, what are you doing? Is it a, you know, are you swiping? And is it a nasal swipe? Are you like, like, what are you doing?
So let's start there, actually. And like, how would we do it? Like, I come into the lab to see you. Let's talk about in a lab. Like, what would we do?
So in a lab, we get a lancet to do a prick. It's essentially like pricking you with a needle, right? Extract it.
The needle jabs out and pokes your finger and blood starts to come out of your finger, right?
Yeah. And for a real quick analogy, if anyone's ever seen a diabetic test their blood glucose, exactly the same thing. So anyway, you get a small prick on your finger or an earlobe. It could be anywhere, but these are the parts with the best blood flow to extract from and are uninhibited, really, by... Like, if you are exercising on a treadmill or something, or especially a bike, you have access to these extremities. So then the blood obviously comes out. You'll insert a strip into the sensor, and then this will, like, it's like a capillary, so it will immediately draw blood into it. Only about, it's a few microliters. A drop of blood.
It's not a lot. And, you know, it's not like blood is ooze, like blasting out of your fingers. Although, you know, because sometimes it's hard to get blood out of your finger if someone has calluses. I remember one of the grad students, because they say, don't squeeze it. Not only do you damage the red blood cells, but like, if you put it under pressure, the blood has this tendency to then squirt out, right? And it went all over one of the professor's face, you know, like someone's blood. Yeah, it was a lot because it was someone's exercising, someone then squeezes it, and so you don't want that to happen. But generally it's just a little bit of blood, and then we just give them like a cotton swab or something like that to put on their finger, and it stops bleeding very soon.
Yeah, and once this capillary within the lactate strip, as it's termed, once the blood's full and there's a capillary, there is a reagent in there which reacts to a certain metabolite. So in this case, that's lactate, but it could also be cholesterol, it could be glucose, it could be beta hydroxybutyrate or ketones. So I have a ketone meter as well, which doubles as I can test blood glucose in that as well. But anyway, there's a reagent there. That reaction from the reagent and lactate causes an electrical charge. Electrical charge is measured by the meter, the device, the handheld device, which is about the size, like slightly smaller than a cell phone. So old school cell phones.
Yeah, it looks kind of like the Motorola Razr. You remember that one?
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, the size of a Motorola Razr. And then you get that electrical charge is, the strength of the charge is correlated with the strength of the reaction, which is correlated to the concentration, and voila, that's how you get blood lactate concentration. Cool. So the strips,
they're the expensive part.
They can be like $3 or $4.
Oh, okay.
All right. So now you've spent $1,000. You also need to buy the lancets. You can't just, you know, we're not heroin addicts. We're not just jabbing ourselves with the same needle all the time. Not that all heroin addicts do that. I just
and not that seen that's bad either.
He said it.
So it starts to add up because you actually have to take blood multiple times, because what you want to do is plot a curve. And
that's
you want
right.
to see when the concentration starts to build up and increase.
And then you could have not done it quick enough, or not the capillary might have got an air bubble in it, and you might need another one. So now you've spent, or you did want to take one measure at the start of your your exercise just to test baseline, and you've spent $8,
yeah,
kind of thing. and so where you'd need a professional, or say like I have a relationship with a supplier now, I can get the consumables for cheaper. I'm buying large quantities, and you don't have to outlay the $1,000, but you can spend a couple hundred bucks to get me to run the test, and you don't have to think about anything. So yes, you can do it yourself. No, you definitely don't need a PhD. There are plenty of books and everything out there to understand it. But to fully utilize it, you'd at least want a professional guidance or help around it. That's been my opinion anyway. What do you?
Well, I would not recommend anyone to be out there taking anyone else's blood on not knowing how to keep it clean and safe. Because that's one of the things.
There's alcohol swabs, there's toxic waste disposal, there's sharp spins. There's a lot of stuff around it. If you're just doing it on yourself, that's your problem in your own time.
Yeah. But so really the way that we would do it in a lab is normally we do it in a lab, and someone starts a test just like they're doing a VO2 max test, and where the test progressively gets harder and harder because we're trying to plot that curve, right? So we know that at rest, blood lactate concentration is going to be pretty low, and that's how the test starts. So you might say start riding at 25 watts, which is like nothing, but then gets 25 watts harder every minute or something like that. And if you take blood every few minutes, you can plot that on the curve, and you can see when it starts to build up, and the blood lactate concentration is above the threshold that you're looking for. So you could imagine someone's riding quite easy for a long time. They get close to their threshold, and since it starts to get harder, that lactate concentration builds up. And we know that when they start breathing really harder, the lactate concentration hits a certain point that we're looking for. They're pretty limited because the test is going to continue to get harder. And we know that once we're after a threshold and go beyond it and it starts getting harder, our time's super limited. So,
when you're doing those tests, you're like, we can see all the numbers. We can see the heart rate. Yeah. We can see the power. We can hear the respiratory compensation point. We can see the lactate. How are you feeling? Yeah, not too bad.
Yeah, this is pretty good.
Bro, I know you're feeling bad.
Yeah. I can see you're feeling bad even if you don't want to tell me. I'm not even going to ask.
Oh, yeah, no, I think I'll hit 500. I'm like, all right, well, you're not going to, but that's fine.
Yep, keep going.
And so this is where also the testing side of things becomes really important, because there is no lying, right?
yeah, that's true.
And so we can do this test, and we determine this threshold, okay? Now, how accurate is this? Who knows? It's because it's on that day within that test. So once we at least have this really good point that we can start to test from, you know, so we can go, okay, this is the red line. All right, above this, definitely. Okay, below this, we're all good. But what is happening around this line, you know, is if we go 10 watts below, or like 5 seconds per K, are we still at the line? So we need to kind of figure that out. And now for me, or anyone who's doing like a steady state, pretty much running really, or even a time trialist and cycling, Ironman especially, these kind of ultra endurance events, is steady state, right? So what we need to do is figure out where along that threshold you start to accumulate lactate. So what I did is like, I'm going to be running a marathon and I want to be slightly below that point of accumulation. So I was like, all right, 330s. I'm going to head out and run 330s and see what happens. And I did that, and I was able to sustain 330s for half an hour with concentrations of 3.2 at halfway, so 5Ks, and then 3.9 at 10K, at 10 kilometers. And I did a 2 hour run beforehand as a warm up, as a pre-fatigue, because I want to get the best relationship with a marathon, which is going to take me around 2.5 hours. And to see what that looks like. Am I able to sustain 3:30s? Yes, I am. Great. So that is right. That is definitely right around my threshold. So now I can tailor my training better and my pacing strategies better to suit that threshold. But then, Matt, like, that doesn't have a lot of implications or relations to, like, an enduro or a mountain biker, does it?
No, not per se, but we do know that if we're trying to get more fit, which is what we're trying to do usually when we're training, right? We're trying to get more fit. Like, the threshold is a really good measurement to be able to tell, okay, did we get more fit?
Yeah.
So that's why we do it.
Yeah. But I'm trying, like, now, like, my training is all, like, targeted around that sustaining a relatively what we'd call moderate concentration of lactate, just trying to hold it below that point of accumulation as fast as possible. But then when we have, you know, when we're talking about like a downhiller or the cross-country mountain bikers who shoot out the gate, let's say we go, okay, you know, we're doing the start. Boom, we do the start. It's 10, 20 seconds, and then we'll just stop you and test. It's going to be, lactate is going to be 8 or 9, you know, with peak. What would you say the peak is? We probably should reference that. Maybe 15? Anything above 10, definitely. Depends on, like, how well trained you are.
Yeah, well, this is where it gets interesting, because sprinters can generally create more lactate, right? So if we tested, like, a track sprinter, they might get to 20-something for their blood lactate concentration. 26, I think I've seen testing.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, so we were testing, like, CrossFit athletes. And yeah, it was getting crazy, high lactate. So the more anaerobically trained you are, the higher you can get that blood lactate concentration, because the muscular contractions that you're doing, you're pretty much just using glycolysis, right? Or
yeah, ATP, and you PCR. Like the big people, they're not thin people, you know, they're not lean thin individuals. They have large amounts of glycolytic fibers, type 2 muscle, fast twitch muscle fibers. So they have more. They just have more muscle fibers to create more lactate. So they are going to peak out at greater concentrations than runners and cyclists and mountain bikers.
Yes, but an endurance athlete is still going to generate a ton of lactate from going hard. And what we really need to do then is to start to bring back the concentrations down, because we know that it's associated with the acidity. And if the muscle environment gets too acidic, we're going to have to slow down, right? So we want to be able to clear all that lactate, use bicarbonate to expel the buildup of hydrogen ions, and get that lactate to that sustainable level, go hard again, repeat.
Yeah, that's right. So we can test you after the sprint, you know, and for Matt's love of pacing,
especially
in mountain biking, this we can test that. We can say, hey, look, okay, you've definitely gone hundy out the gate. Okay, we tested that. Now I want you to do that same thing, but I'm also now you've got the descent, the technical descent, all right, and you think you're not working because you're going downhill. We can test again, and we might have athlete A and athlete B. Athlete A loves the endurance stuff. Zone 1, zone 2. Was that athlete A or B? I forgot what I said. A.
Yeah.
B. B goes hard with the crew. Yeah. Right? Not
Steve.
Very well aerobically trained.
It's like
trained.
Steve that it's we
Steve.
Talked about
Steve
in our
from the
designing
previous
training
episode. Yep. Steve's just, he's that dude, man. He's hundy. This is pre our training plan that we wrote for him.
Right, yeah.
And he does his descent. 1, boom, back down at 3, sub threshold. Amazing, ready to go hard again. Well done, athlete, eh? Steve, bro, you're still at 8.
Yeah.
You are...
You're in trouble at the next uphill, aren't you?
Yeah. But at this stage, they can still be toe-to-toe, neck and neck.
Yep.
But we keep going, and Steve's just like, mate, like, you know, you're going to hit this next hill or this next pedal section. Boom, you're... back up around 10. Now you've got another, and that burning sensation, that acidity, that muscular fatigue or contractile dysfunction. There's that feedback loop, that feeling of like, I need to slow down, please stop.
And that's what happens, right? Steve is eventually going to have to slow down. But the important thing to note is that Steve doesn't feel that much different from the start. Steve is just going as hard as Steve can, right? And whereas the person that paced properly, it probably held back a little bit at the start, and now they're starting, it's starting to catch up with them as they're going.
And
with lower blood lactate concentrations, it's more sustainable.
And something like cross-country mountain biking, it is a large amounts of and road cycling, like Criterium, you know, where there's a lot of surging, a lot of big power outputs above a concentration, like above threshold, then a lot of time below threshold. And if you're not efficient at lactate, like metabolism, then you are going to have real issues later on in the event.
So I guess that's the question that we were sent. This is the other question. So if we understand this, what the sensor can provide, a more accurate threshold measurement, are we able to see how long it takes to recover after an extremely hard effort? So were you able to see any of that with what you measured and like what's actually going on there?
Well, this doesn't normally happen in a lactate step test, but after I maxed out at 3:15 per K, I did another 1200 meters at 4-minute Ks. I wanted to figure out that exact question. Like, okay, well, 4-minute Ks beforehand had 1 millimolar, definitely sub-threshold, definitely sustainable. What happens if I do that after going really hard? You know, like, essentially, like blowing up, you know? Starting the race too fast and then realizing, oh, yeah, I should probably slow down.
Like 20 minutes later.
So lactate concentration stayed at 9.
This is after you did your progressively harder.
I peaked out at 13 point something. And then I did 4 minutes, 4 minute per K for 1200 meters, just over like 4.5 minutes.
So nothing crazy.
No. And that sub threshold, definitely, which I know because I just previously tested. And I wasn't able to fully recover from that initial bout of the not only the 330 but the 315, so the above threshold stuff, let's just call it. I did a really, really hard above threshold effort, then I came back to a sustainable effort. Now I'm still at 9. Okay, so although I'm below threshold, I still haven't fully metabolized all of that lactate, all of those hydrogen ions, and I'm still what we'd call like in the red.
You're kind of in debt, right, for that really hard effort.
I'm in debt, and this relates a lot to my training. Like I'm super aerobically fit, but in terms of being able to buffer and metabolize lactate, I'm not that good. Like super high concentrations like that.
Yeah.
Right. So.
And this is what we were talking about off air. We're trying to go back through the science and like, whoa, what the, trying to remember what actually is happening. With lactate, because some people are better at clearing it and using it. And then, converting lactate back to pyruvate, that there's a limiting step in there based on the concentrations of your lactate dehydrogenase to convert it to pyruvate. But then there's also another rate limiting step to convert pyruvate into acetyl-CoA. And this is where kind of this buildup can happen. So
there's a lot of science to digest. So we should probably like break that down a little bit. And we have lactate, okay? We got that.
Yep.
We went hard, we got that. Now we need to get rid of it. So we have a enzyme, lactate dehydrogenase, that's going to get rid of it in the muscle cell for us. Awesome. It converts it into the pyruvate. But beforehand, pyruvate was actually produced by glycolysis, by the burning of sugar, and we need it, like we can convert that into acetyl-CoA, which goes into the oxidative metabolism, aerobic. So if, let's say we're just cruising, Matt.
Yep, cruising.
Mainly we're going to use fat, but we might use some sugar, some glucose, some glycogen. We'll break it down. Glucose goes through glycolysis. We have pyruvate. It goes to acetyl-CoA. It goes into the TCA or the Krebs cycle, whatever you want to call it. We're like good. That's like really like efficient. But then we start to like go hundy. Fat, you're too slow. You're not keeping up, right? Glycolysis, give me the energy. All right, now we have heaps of pyruvate, but pyruvate dehydrogenase, which converts into the acetyl-CoA, which goes into the TCA Krebs cycle. Like it's full. It's like that. It's like the checkout person when you're at the supermarket, and you just keep loading stuff up.
Yeah,
you
know? Like traffic jam.
Yeah, you don't want to use those plastic bags for your fruit and veg. So you just keep putting like 13 different items, like five.
It's like oranges rolling down the thing.
Yeah. And they're like, oh my god, it's like that. And so what your metabolic system does is goes, all right, forget trying to make it efficiently with oxygen. I'm just going to throw everything in one bag. And I'm going to put the bread at the bottom, the eggs in the middle, and then the mandarins on top. And that is production of lactate. And once that happens, because there's a bottleneck there, again, like now we stop exercising, or at least slow down. And the lactate, or the pyruvate dehydrogenase, the checkout chick, sorry, that's offensive. The checkout person is like, oh, cool, yeah, all the fruit and veg is gone. Now you're just on big ticket items. That's fine. I can handle that. You just got some muesli bars, some cereal, and some Coke Zero. I can put that through. I can handle that. And now that they're doing that, but there's like that, essentially that bag that is like falling apart and everything's coming back. So that's lactate trying to come back. Get back in, but that can't get let back in because you're still putting stuff on the conveyor belt for the checkout person, and now lactate can't get back in. All right, so if we're more aerobically fit, it means that we're not going to have to rely on glycolysis and the pyruvate. We can essentially like get stuff for free. We don't even need to use the checkout person. We're going to use the self-checkout, and we can get all that stuff through without needing pyruvate, so the lactate dehydrogenase can clear more lactate. But if we're still going at a reasonable intensity, you know, like you're not, you go 100 and then 50 100.
Yeah.
you are now in this point at which like, yeah, there's a bottleneck and we can't clear it. And that's what was happening with me, in that there was still a bit of a bottleneck happening because I'd gone really hard and then I was going like, not hard, but also not really fitties. Easy either.
Yeah, you're going fitties. Pretty hard. Yeah, so but that's important. So that's happening in all of us. And someone who is training to be able to repeat a hard effort, they're obviously going to start to increase their ability and increase the enzymatic activity of things like pyruvate dehydrogenase and lactate dehydrogenase. But for you, like you're not actually interested in that. So it kind of explains your ability there. You're not doing repeat efforts.
No, there's a very specific intensity that I'm trying to just get efficient at. Like above that, it's like whatever, you know. I don't need to train that kind of reconversion cycle. I pretty much just need to export lactate, and more so like the hydrogen ions because of the pH effect. I just need to export it out of the working muscle so that muscle can continue to operate efficiently. Whereas, yeah, if we think about someone who needs repeated sprint ability, that they're going to need more of those enzymes, and that becomes training. It's like any other enzyme. You need more ability to burn more fat. You need more ability to transport glucose into the muscle, break down glycogen, like all that stuff. It's training specific, and yeah, you won't get any of that doing aerobic training.
Yeah,
Yeah. And that's why you can't just go easy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I guess this, if we think about how this relates to that question, like, okay, is this Lactate Pro lactate meter giving me better information to be able to understand how I recover better after a hard effort? That's where I'm kind of like, well, you know, it can tell you that, and then we can measure and see what's happening. But I'm not sure if you having that Lactate Pro is telling you anything really different. It's not telling you, because you could just measure your performance in a way. And you also know that you're not going to be competing in that way, going over your redlining and then trying to run at tempo. Right? You're just not going to do that. So to the question, like, is this going to help me understand how much faster I recover? Like, yeah, but, you know, you have to keep testing this over and over and over.
It's a tool in the toolbox, right? Yeah. It's one of those things where you're probably better off seeing the professional after a month of a training intervention. Like, okay, I'm going to go see Matt up at the lab because I have this downhill event coming up. I've been doing base training. Let's see how good my repeat sprint ability is. So that's the thing. You can just test that if you have a power meter or even just distance, right? You can go, I'm going to give myself 1 minute recoveries and I'm going to do max 10 second sprints. How long did I last above 500 watts? I lasted 10. I did a training intervention around repeat sprint ability and I lasted 15. Clearly I am better.
Right. And you don't need a lactate analyzer to tell you this.
You don't at all.
This is where, like, it starts to get a bit like, do we really need to stab someone's fingers a million times? So when
but
I
then
had...
that information is still like, I'll let you get, yeah.
Well, we can also, you know, since we know what's happening with the energy systems and how we're using fuel, we can also get similar information by looking at other data. Right. So looking at the oxygen uptake, we have an idea of what you're using for energy, and we don't actually need to measure lactate concentrations. So, you know, when Wynn Masters came into the lab, World Cup downhiller, has an amazing sprint. He's super fit. We didn't actually take any lactate because it wasn't really like that important. We wanted to measure like what his aerobic fitness was. We found his threshold by doing a ramp test using the gas analysis. We could have measured blood, you know, and then we did a sprint test. So how hard can he sprint and maintain that? I'm not sure if stabbing his fingers would have given us anything else in that test session. So it's like, it's good, but, you know, if we have other means to do it, I like those other means a little bit better.
Yeah, I guess it creates a clearer picture if you were maybe like max repeat sprint ability, but you can test maybe just slightly lower intense, like a power output or slightly lower pace. So what I want to be able to do is, you know what, when I was, because I ran for, by the time I'd done my last finger prick test at the end of my 10 kilometer, like 30 minute threshold, at 3:30s at the end after 2 hours of running, it felt really hard, you know, like, and I tested 3.9. I am training at the right intensity. And the week before I did the same session, I didn't have my lactate meter, but I slowed down because I was like, nah, this feels too hard. This isn't threshold.
Right. I see.
Right. Yeah. Right. And so again, I was like, all right, last week I was actually just being a bit soft. Okay. I wasn't like, you know, I should be training that if I had tested myself then and I was a lot lower or mad, I was fatigued.
Right.
And now I know I should be able to sustain 3:30s because I have that reference point. There's no
ambiguity.
That's it. There's no guesswork around some of this stuff when you go, how, because at that stage, what is heart rate? Was it really hot? Did you drink enough beforehand? You know, did you have caffeine? Did you have a caffeine gel? Was it 180 or 185? Like, you're going hard. You're within your threshold. So it could be a plus or minus 5 beat range. I can't reliably look at that and go, oh yeah, I was going as hard as I was last time. But otherwise I'm just asking myself, yeah, I went hard the week before I did that session. I went hard this week and I'm 10 seconds per K faster. Oh shit. Was I faster or was I just trying harder? Or was I like, you know, not trying hard enough? Yeah.
So that kind of leads on to our other question that we got. So the question was, what day-to-day factors might change the measurements that we see and how can we use those as indicators? So do you think if you went and did that test another time that you'd see something different? Is it going to change anything you would do besides, you know, potentially finding a better idea of your threshold?
Yeah. Sorry, what was your question? What did you say?
My question was actually different now that I think. So there's just so many questions, I guess. So what are the day-to-day factors then? That was the actual question.
Yeah, right. Fatigue and diet.
Oh, right.
Right. So fatigue is if you are super aerobically trained, but you've done a 6-hour ride or walk or run in zone 1 or 2 every day for 7 days, like a whole week, right? You're fatigued and you're fatigued your like aerobic muscle fibers. So now when I tell you to go and do some like 2-minute effort, you're fatigued. You just can't do what you normally would. So you'll produce the lactate for sure because you're still recruiting like really inefficient anaerobic muscle fibers, but you also don't have the contractile capacity to put out a speed or whatever output that you did if I had rested you for a week, right? So now I may get an improper determination of your threshold. Be like, oh man, it's 200 watts, you know? And then maybe I set your training zones off of that and you find them way too easy. So fatigue for sure is going to affect it. Now diet, if you are low carb, your keto, your paleo, whatever you want to call it, your carnivore.
Vegan. It's different.
If you're a fruitarian and you just pretty much eat fruit sugars, there's gonna be a different reliance on glycolysis there. There's gonna be a different capacity for fat oxidation. So there's things like pretty much like if you just eliminate carbs, you don't have the glycogen available to operate anaerobically because you don't have the sugars available, right? So the peaks, threshold probably wouldn't really change. Ability to maintain threshold would change. Ability to operate well above threshold is definitely diminished through a low carbohydrate diet because you don't have the precursor. You don't have the glucose to make the lactate. That's just simple like chemistry, really. You don't have the product. You don't put any petrol in the car. You can't go anywhere. You don't have a hybrid.
Wouldn't it be great if we were?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not going to get into it. But that's diet and then fatigue can be the factors that are really going to affect lactate concentration as we can measure it. Yeah.
Cool. It's like a... my stance on this whole thing with blood lactate is I really like using a power meter. And I think a power meter can tell us a lot of information that we want to know. So we look at performance. And then, you know, if we start to look at blood lactate, it can add some information if we already have an understanding of some of the other stuff. So if we're looking at all of these things at the same time, that's when we start to realize these differences. Because I know you were looking at other things, such as your running form, as you were going through this testing as well.
Yeah.
And it's when we start to have all the pieces together, that's when we can start to make a really good call. And I see the lactate analysis as another piece of the puzzle. Maybe not like something for everyone to go get, but definitely something for everyone to at least try at some point and to get an understanding of how things feel and how their blood lactate responds. And then how then that relates to their other training that they do every day.
Yeah, it's just like another, yeah, it's another reference point, right? It's another line in the sand that we can use for comparison later on. And where I'd love to give it to a lot of people is after an hour or an hour and a half of their easy rides.
Yeah, that would be really cool.
Right, so what? And I'll do this in a video. I've been doing videos on my lactate meter in my training, so you can check those out on my YouTube channel, just Dr. Will O'Connor on YouTube, and some of this analysis around it. But where, if you go out, this is perfect testing for the gray zone. You can go out and also someone's aerobic capacity, because we can all be fit and we can all test our threshold after. So what did that take me? About 15 minutes all up, maybe 15, 20 minutes. We can determine a threshold, but then also your capacity. If you're only training 2 days a week, but you just through your genetic makeup, you have the ability to, you know, your threshold may pick up at 300 watts, but then I say, all right, you know, mathematically, scientifically, you can operate at 70% of that for 2 hours. Here you go. You're actually not fit enough sub threshold. Then we can test again and get a better reference and go, oh, okay, actually, no, we need to work on your fitness, not your threshold, not sprintability or anything, because your race is 3 hours and you're struggling at what should be an aerobic capacity ride or run. There's a lot, Matt. Like, it's sports science, right? It's science. It's continuing to evolve. It's dynamic. The more data we can have, the more kind of information we can give an athlete about what's going on.
Yeah, and that's the whole point, really, of this podcast episode, is to give you an understanding of, you know, what is lactate? Can it be your friend? Is it always bad? What's happening? And how can we start to have more control of how we respond to different efforts and how we then train for our specific events?
That's right. And in a following episode, we'll really target interval training and how that works to target some of these threshold, above threshold recovery things, because work to rest ratios, like, it all really matters for different athletes, for different demands. Like, I'm not going to be doing 10-second repeat sprints on the bike to improve my marathon running, you know?
No more Zwift races for you?
No, I still love Zwift. I didn't say to improve my Zwift racing. I said to improve my marathon running. But, you know, yeah, do we need to rest for 3 minutes or 20? There's lactate could definitely tell you that because of the recovery. But then so could your heart rate, you know? So lots to go into in further episodes. So stay tuned.
Yeah, stay tuned. And we'll also do a webinar on the same topic as well, because it's really good when we have the graphs to do that as well, to show like the shifting of the curve, the increase in the concentrations and all that. And we have some really good infographics to go along with it.
Yeah, so sign up to SmartMTB training, sign up to Endurance Training Hub, get on the mail list, share this with your friends, whatever you do. It helps us continue this podcast, get a little bit of cash coming in so we can continue to develop and expand our resources, spend more time, and yeah, get more information to you guys. So as always, thanks for listening. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. We'll see you next time.